The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Who's going to win the battle between the Wall Street big guys and the Reddit little guys? Plus, is COVID an excuse for suppressing civil liberties? And comedian Terrence Williams. All coming up. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast. I've gotten to be good friends with Mike Lindell of MyPillow, and he is just such an awesome guy. Really fun to be around and just absolutely suffused with infectious excitement and energy in everything he sets his mind to. And one of the things he set his mind to is his company, MyPillow, which, as you know, is under the gun now from the left. Mike makes all kinds of stuff, 160 products, and he offers deep discounts on them if you go through this podcast. He's offering a special buy one, get one free on the sheet sets. And he's got the world's most comfortable sheets, which come from the best cotton in the world. Apparently, there's a region in the Sahara Desert, the Nile River, the Mediterranean Sea. They kind of all come together to create the ideal weather conditions for growing cotton. And the Giza Dream bed sheets are made with this long staple cotton. Mike guarantees they'll be the most comfortable sheets you ever own. Once you sleep on Mike's sheets, you'll really never want to sleep on anything else. Giza Dream Sheets are available in a bunch of colors, and like all Mike's products, they come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. So check out the sheets, but check out the pillows, check out the dog bed, check out the robes. It never ends. Right now, you can buy one, get one free on the sheets by calling 800-876-0227. Use promo code Dinesh. For a limited time, buy one, get one free. Call 800-876-0227 or just go to MyPillow.com. Check out all the merchandise. Just make sure to use promo code Dinesh.
America needs this voice. But times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Who's winning the great clash between the Wall Street big guys, the big money guys, and the Reddit little guys? This is all that people have been talking about, and it's a very important story for reasons I'm going to go into. But I can give you the result of round one. Wall Street won. Reddit guys, a zero. And this is, by the way, not a surprise. In some sense, you could say the big guys usually get to stomp on the little guys. This is kind of the way of the world, unfortunately. But what makes this particular result surprising, I would say even shocking, even stunning, is the reason that the big guys beat the little guys. Not because they're stronger than the little guys, but because they rigged the system to shut down the little guys. They literally closed the market. That's what happened. That's why the little guys went down on the canvas. It's almost like the referee jumped in the ring and punched one of the boxers who was actually doing really well so that the other guy could jump up and down and say, I got the round, I got the round. Now, how does this really happen? Well, the trading site on which the Reddit guys were operating is Robinhood. It's called Robinhood. And essentially what happened is that these big brokers like TD Ameritrade and Schwab essentially restricted and shut down using the ability to buy through Robinhood. They intervened. And then Robinhood itself, the supposed site set up to protect the little investor, Robinhood itself says no more buying of AMC, no more buying of GameStop, no more buying of these other companies, no more driving their shares, their prices artificially up. We're going to shut you down. Wow. Robinhood, it literally becomes the sheriff of Nottingham. But why would Robinhood do this? Well, the answer, if you can believe a whistleblower, I'm going to read now what a whistleblower from Robinhood posted. I work for Robinhood. He goes, I'm a low-level tech guy. And he says, the founder began to get calls from Sequoia Capital and the White House that pressured him into closing trading. This is a bombshell allegation. And you might think, well, why would the White House do this? Why would the Treasury Department, for example, get involved? How does this really all work behind the scenes? Well, the way it works behind the scenes is that these large hedge funds, the people who were losing billions because of the battle with Reddit, essentially what the Reddit people were doing is driving up the shares of these companies, companies that had been shorted by the Wall Street big money. And when you bet that a stock is going to go down, when you think GameStop is going to go down, AMC is going to go down, and it goes up, you lose a lot of money. So these guys were losing a lot of money. But it turns out they had made a very careful investment in one Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary. I happen to have in my hand a list of all the speaking engagements of Janet Yellen. And I want to just read you some of them. I'm going to focus really on just one company, Citadel. So Citadel, in 2019, pays Janet Yellen a speaking fee of $157,000 to give a speech. And then a little bit later, they pay her $180,000 for another speech. And then a little later, for a couple of speeches in 2020, they pay her $337,000. And Janet Yellen's, this is like her speaking list. Goldman Sachs, $67,000. City National Bank, $112,000. Now, wow. I give speeches for a living. I get paid a pretty handsome fee, but nothing close to this. What does Janet Yellen have to say? What could she possibly put in her speech that's worth over $100,000? Well, the answer is nothing. The reason that these companies do this is they're buying future access to Janet Yellen. They feel that she's one of the key people who could end up the Biden Treasury Secretary, and then she's going to return their calls. And when things get a little rough on the street, calls can be made. Hey, Janet, aren't you going to come through for us this time? Aren't we the reason you were able to pay off your mortgage and take that European vacation and own that private plane and this and that? This is how it works, guys. Let's not be naive about it. So anyone who thinks that Janet Yellen is being paid because she's an amazing speaker, her jokes are unbelievable, you know, was born yesterday, let's just say. Now, here's the broader point I want to make from all this. And it's a very disturbing tendency on the part of the left, and we need to be aware of it. And that is that when the left is losing, when they're losing the debate, what do? They cut off your ability to communicate. They shut you down on digital media. They try to restrict you, throw you off the mainstream media. When the left is losing in the market, they say, let's shut down the market. Let's close down the market. Let's stop trading, at least for a little while, until we can regroup, until the big guys can kind of get their wind back, having been punched in the stomach. Let's get the system, the government, to weigh in on our behalf. Let's get these digital companies. And by the way, some of these digital companies like Facebook and so on have been restricting negative reviews on Robinhood because obviously people are very angry. You may almost say Robinhood's troops are rebelling against Robinhood because Robinhood has turned out to be in league with the sheriff. It's very sickening. And so they shut you down by cutting off your means of communication, your means of speaking, your means of trade. And the reason this is so pernicious is because if you think about it, our rights, our basic rights are meaningless if we don't have the means to exercise them. Let's say that you have a right to go to church, which we do. It's right there in the Constitution. And then the left says, no, but we're in a national lockdown. Everybody's confined to their homes. Well, the right to go to church becomes meaningless. You can't go. Yeah, you can worship at home, but if you believe church is a communal activity, you worship in a group in church, then you can't do that. They've cut off that right. Let's say you have a right to assemble, but they say, well, you can't use the public roads. You can't get to the assembly. Well, that right is completely meaningless. You have the right to free speech, but in the public square, which is now, of course, driven by technology, by digital platforms, they're going to throw you off the platforms because they own the platforms. Effectively, you're cut off from participating in democratic debate because that's where it occurs. It's kind of like the ancient Greeks saying, we're going to be debating this in the Agora, but we're going to prevent you from getting to the Agora. So yeah, you have the right to speak. You just can't get to where you need to be in order to speak. Now, the worst thing of all is that these pathetic people, these leftists in government and also in the private sector, and you hear this from digital moguls and you hear it from Wall Street pompous types, we're doing it for your own good. We're doing it for your own good. Really? They're pretending like they're doing it to protect the little Reddit guy. Oh, that guy doesn't realize that companies like AMC and GameStop aren't worth that much. They're paying way too much. We got to stop them before they hurt themselves. That's the stated motive, but that's not the real motive. The real motive is let's stop them because they're actually making money and we're losing a whole bunch of money. We have to stop them so we can get our act in order, so we can get out in time, so we can save our yachts and our mansions and our private domestic staff. Lincoln once said that, and he was talking in the context of the planter class, he said that these are wolves disguised as shepherds. They pretend to be looking out for the lamb. But of course, they're not looking out for the lamb. They're looking out, in Lincoln's words, they're only paying attention to their own greedy maws, their own greedy mouths, feeding themselves at the expense of the lamb. That's their game. And it's a sickening game. Maybe it's the law of nature, but it's a bit hard to take when the wolf says, I'm not doing it for me, little lamb. I'm doing it for you. We're now at the mercy of one-party control and an agenda driven by tax and spend economics. I don't need to go into all the ramifications, but fiscally, you can expect compounded growth of our national debt and the systematic devaluation of the U.S. dollar. So there's really one question. What is your plan? What are you doing right now to protect your savings and your retirement? I'm excited to have Birch Gold Group as an advertiser because Birch Gold Group will help you diversify a portion of your savings, an IRA or eligible 401k, into an IRA backed by gold and silver. They are the premier precious metals IRA company in America with an A+ Better Business Bureau rating, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of satisfied customers. There's a tidal wave of inflation coming. Gold is your hedge. Debbie and I are investing through Birch Gold, and you should too. Text Dinesh to 484848 for your free information kit on precious metals IRA or to speak with a Birch Gold representative today. Time is running out, but you can protect your savings now. Text Dinesh to 484848. This whole controversy involving GameStop and Reddit and Robinhood has actually created a bipartisan animus against Wall Street shenanigans. And it raises the rather strange possibility of a kind of alliance between the left and the right against the establishment, a sort of populist uprising against a corrupt, entrenched establishment, not just a financial establishment, but a political establishment. So here's Bernie Sanders tweeting out, the business model of Wall Street is fraud. The business model is fraud. Wall Street is based on fraud. That's on the one end. Now let's hear the establishment reply to that, which sounds something like this. Our institutions in America are working just fine, Dinesh. Our election system is basically fine with a few things that we might need to iron out. And our legal system is really fine. It's the best system in the world. And, you know, yes, there might be an occasional abuse, but of course, it's the best we got. And Wall Street is, you know, these are very industrious people and they work extremely hard and they got very good educations. They really deserve the wealth that they create because of all the stuff they produce. And you got to step back from all this because it's almost enough to make you an Occupy Wall Street guy. When you hear this kind of patent nonsense, you begin to say, what is the value that these guys are producing day to day? When somebody shuts down trading on Robinhood so that all the shorted positions that you have as a Wall Street mogul, you can minimize your losses on. You were going to lose billions. Now you're going to lose very little. You're essentially making the market do your bidding. This is not free markets, folks. This is actually the abuse of the free market. It's in fact exactly what the socialists are accused of doing. And I think if we turned over the market to them, they would make it much worse because that's what they would do. So we are now in a little bit of a quandary here because we're for markets, but supposedly our own side, and by own side I mean traditionally, the business community has been on the side of the GOP and the Republican Party has been the protector of the business community. But what do we, how do we think about all this stuff going on now? I want to use the case study of a billionaire investor, Leon Cooperman, who is very upset at all this animus against Wall Street and spoke out against it recently. Here.
The reason the market is doing what it's doing is people are sitting at home getting the checks from the government, okay? And this fair share is a bullshit concept. It's just a way of attacking wealthy people.
So there's a little part of me here that wants to cheer this notion that social justice is a term that is roundly abused. It's true. And there are many cases where social justice is invoked to promote absolute nonsense. And there's no social injustice underlying it if you really look at it. But there is social injustice in this case. Injustice in which the market is manipulated in favor of the rich and against the ordinary guy. So you might think, well, Dinesh, wow, I mean, do we really want to start a big fight? We've got so many divisions in the Republican Party. Do we want to really start a fight with a right-winger like Cooperman, who is on our side, is trying basically to give it to the left? Well, here's the big surprise. Cooperman is not a right-winger. Watch.
Who did you vote for, Lee?
To be honest with you, I voted for Biden. I voted for Biden because I voted my values and not my pocketbook.
You know what? He's actually lying to you. Cooperman says, oh, I'm not voting my pocketbook. I'm voting my values. Turns out he's voting his values and his pocketbook. Why? Because what these guys are doing, and this is now part of a broader phenomenon, I'm not singling out Cooperman. These wealthy tycoons have decided to stick it to the GOP and go with the left. They maybe have social liberal values. That's part of the reason. But the other reason is they think that they can bend the left to their will. In other words, they can call up the Treasury Department. They've got a straight line to Janet Yellen. Hey, look at all the money we paid her over the past several years. So they believe that they have leverage, to use a Wall Street term, over the Democrats to get the Democrats to comply. Now, first of all, many of these guys are totally out to lunch, totally out to lunch. And what I mean by that is I've had some exposure to these Wall Street tycoons. Some years ago, by the way, I was invited by a big Republican tycoon to talk about, to have a meeting to talk about my movie, Obama's America. And the meeting went sort of like this. First of all, when I showed up, he comes in, you know, he's a short little guy, and he sort of, he doesn't even look at me. He's looking at the ground. He looks at the ground. I'm standing there a little nervous. And then we sit down and he takes out a yellow pad and he starts to write. And I'm looking at him, no greeting, no hello, no real small talk. No. He writes for like 4 minutes. And I'm perfectly convinced in retrospect, this was a power play. It's like, you wait while I gather my thoughts. And then we start talking. And I tell him about my movie. I just give him a brief summary of it. And then he goes this. He goes, Dinesh, I applaud your efforts. Very admirable. But nobody watches movies anymore. A patently ridiculous statement. Now, obviously, I don't say that. I conceal the amazement on my face. I kind of try to look deadpan. And I just listen. It's not true. Actually, the appetite for movies is much greater. People are moving more toward visual media. And then he says this. He goes, Dinesh, I just wish you had compressed the idea of your movie into a 90-second video. Young people these days, all they watch are 90-second videos. And I'm like, sir, I actually do make 90-second videos, and they're called trailers. They're aimed at directing people to go watch the movie. But what struck me about it wasn't that this guy, who's supposedly living in the culture, doesn't have a clue. He's an older guy. I don't blame him for that. What I blame him for is this arrogant assumption that he knows what's going on when he doesn't. Yes, he's an expert in investing and hedge funds and this and that, but the great fallacy here is to assume that if someone knows something about one thing, they know something about everything. It really makes me laugh. In fact, kind of reminds me a little bit of an uncle of mine in India. This is a guy who had come to America in 1969, and he was here for 4 weeks in Louisville, Kentucky. And then I came to America in 1978, and I spent a year living with four families in Arizona. I went to college at Dartmouth for 4 years. I lived in Princeton for a year and a half. I was in the Reagan White House, and I'd go home talking to my family, and I'd be talking about America, and he'd interrupt me. He'd be like, oh, no, Dinesh, it's not like that. It's really not like that. You have it all wrong. And I'm thinking, what the heck? You don't know anything about America. You made a very brief visit there. You're lecturing me, who's been in America now for years, is enmeshed in American politics and American life. So this is what happens. You have people who assume these sort of airs, and these Wall Street guys are like this. They don't know anything. Well, one thing that they need to learn is that the GOP is sort of done with them. You guys have stabbed us in the back and done it for the last time. And you can't count on us anymore because we stuck by you. In fact, we were kind of your protectors for decades. And there may be a few guys like Paul Ryan who will rush to your defense, but Paul Ryan doesn't have any political weight anymore. But the GOP base does, Republicans do. And so now you're on your own with a class of people that wants to destroy you, knows how to destroy you, and is completely unscrupulous. They're even more unscrupulous than you are, if you can figure that out. And you're defenseless against them, and they will come and they will Antifa-style burn down politically, economically, your wealth and destroy your respectability. And then you will turn to us and you will be a little surprised to find us chuckling on the sidelines. This is not because we've betrayed you, but because you've betrayed us. We owe you nothing, and you can expect from us going forward nothing. The GOP is no longer the party of the rich. We're the party of the middle class and the working class. And as for you, tycoons who want to rig the market, good luck. You're on your own. Is the age of COVID-19 lockdowns over? We're seeing all kinds of signs that Democrats who warned about the grave seriousness of the virus, the national emergency we are in, the global pandemic sweeping across America, the need to basically all hunker down, wear one mask or even two. Two is better than one, and maybe three is better than two. That pursued all these efforts to hold down the economy as a whole. And now suddenly, they're sounding a completely different note. Let's look at some examples. Chicago. Here's Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Due to recent progress, Chicago is now under Tier 1 mitigations. Indoor dining and more. Chicago Sun-Times. Governor Pritzker's health team officially gave the green light for restaurants and most bars across Chicago and suburban Cook County to invite customers back inside for indoor service. And it's not just Illinois, it's not just Chicago. Here we go. Governor Gretchen Whitmer announced that indoor dining can resume in Michigan next week. And here we have Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom announces he's going to be lifting stay-at-home orders, allowing outdoor dining and salons to reopen again. Washington, D.C., Mayor Muriel Bowser confirms restaurants in the city will begin reopening beginning on Friday, January 22nd. And then from the CDC. CDC officials are urging a return to classroom instruction as soon as possible, citing evidence showing it is safe with the right protocols. Wow. First of all this opening is exactly what conservatives and many Republicans have been calling for, and we were ridiculed. Listen to the science, Dinesh. The virus doesn't really care. The virus is going to do what it does. Well, apparently we have a very left-wing virus on our hands. Apparently we have a virus that is very sensitive to the election returns. Apparently we have a virus that kind of time, it planned its invasion between March and about November, kind of in time to sort of get Trump. And then having gotten Trump, the virus just dusts off its little furry, little fingers and goes, wow, it's time for us to quit. Time for the virus to go back. And now you can open up again. Isn't this all a little bit too eerily convenient? Isn't this a little bit actually reminiscent of the election returns in which you have a swarm of results? Man, Trump is leading. Trump is ahead. Trump is going, oh, it's not just 50,000. He's 600,000 votes ahead in Pennsylvania. And the next day, ooh, a total shift, a total movement in the opposite direction. Suddenly what was going on the first day is reversed in the second day. And we see a parallel here. And suddenly it's all okay. The virus is now no longer... We can live with the virus, Dinesh. It's a virus we can learn to live with. We can return to normal life. It's really important that we reopen the economy. It's really... People have suffered enough. They need to be able to get back on their feet. And I think we can see that this is the cynical politics of the left. They don't care about people. They were willing to hurt them really badly. They were willing to put people on the street. They were willing to destroy businesses. They were willing to destroy businesses of Democrats living in Democratic cities and Democratic neighborhoods. It was almost like that's the price we have to pay to get Trump, to wound the Trump economy. And having done that, our political incentives now shift. Now, they shift in a certain with a certain ambivalence because I think these Democrat mayors and governors like control. They like being little tyrants or big tyrants. So there's a little bit of ambivalence in opening up because they were just getting to enjoy telling people exactly what to do. But they have left a huge trail of human suffering in their wake. And if you look at this on a global scale, I think it was the United Nations that used the term biblical scale poverty. We're talking not just about people being out of a job, but we're talking about people who essentially have been reduced to complete destitution, to starvation, to famine. And all of this is done because of political manipulation. So am I saying the virus is not real? No, I'm not saying that. But I'm saying the virus has been hugely and cynically manipulated by some very bad, uncaring people. They've done it for political benefit. They've done it for social control, but they've done it nevertheless. And many innocent people have suffered as a result. You never thought COVID could cost you your home, right? It just might, because cybercrime is up 75%. And by far, the most serious cybercrime to worry about is home title theft. The job of the criminals is easier than you think. The title documents to our homes are now online. The thief finds your home title, forges your signature on a quitclaim deed stating you sold your home to him. Then he takes out loans on your home and leaves you in debt. You won't know until late payment or eviction notices arrive, insurance doesn't cover you, and neither do common identity theft programs. That's why I protect my home with Home Title Lock. The instant Home Title Lock detects someone tampering with my home's title, they help shut it down. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and register your address to see if you're already a victim. Then use code RADIO to receive 30 free days of protection. That's code RADIO at HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com. The big topic around the D'Souza home over the past several months has been, you guessed it, COVID-19. A topic that comes up, I would say, many, many times a day. And the reason for this, the centrality of this topic in the D'Souza household is this character right here, my wife, Debbie D'Souza, who is, I would have to say, a little obsessed with COVID. She's going to try to justify her obsession. I'm going to try to puncture some holes in it. Because I think it actually is a little bit of a mania, but she, for her part, thinks that I am suffering from slight delusion. So welcome to the show. I thought we would air some of our family back and forth for people to hear, because we actually don't have quite the same view of COVID.
Yes, we do not. And hi, honey. How are you?
I'm fine. Clearly, our battles over COVID have not diminished our mutual affection. But
no.
Tell people your take on this.
Yes.
Why are you obsessed with COVID?
Okay, so COVID is the monster that I've always been afraid of. And just to kind kind of let everybody know, I've been a germaphobe for years. In the early 90s, I taught kindergarten and I kept getting strep throat. And a doctor friend of mine told me, Debbie, do not touch your face. Don't touch your eyes. Make sure your hands are clean. I think I bought the first big jug of Germex back in the late 90s, and I would use it all the time, and I would put it in little containers before they had them. So I've always been prepared for COVID. And so you can imagine.
And this is why our house currently has like 700 masks and like big jars everywhere. And
I was
feel
one
like
of those,
I'm living in a hospital.
I was one of those people that, you know, when we would go on trips, I would clean the airplane, literally. I would, the seats, I had my own, alcohol wipes, and I would clean up the seat, and I would clean the headrest and the tray, and people would look at me like I was insane. And this was all before COVID. So you can imagine that now I take this virus very seriously.
Now, I will confess that once you put me under this kind of cleanliness regimen, which
yes.
you admit is the product of a kind of germophobia.
Yes.
It did have this positive effect, and that is when I was on the speaking circuit, I would get three humongous colds a year. I mean, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be coughing for like days nonstop. But once I started washing my hands and not touching my face, you say I still touch my face, but...
And the Purell. I made you Purell. Every time you'd shake somebody's hand, I would Purell you. You thought I was crazy.
I thought the daily Purell kind of did it. You don't have to Purell
no.
every time you turn left
yeah.
and turn right. But the net effect I was going to say is my colds vanished. I mean, when was the last time I had a cold? It's been...
Probably 3-4 years.
Yeah. And
now,
you haven't had one in...
A long time. I think the first time I got a cold in 20 years... was when you gave it to me back when we were doing Hillary's America. Okay, I won't go into that. But
okay.
But you know.
But let's come back to COVID for a minute.
Yes.
Because this is a real virus, I think we both think, but it,
yes.
you agree it's been politically manipulated by the left.
Absolutely has. Absolutely. It's a real virus, but it is really interesting how the left, as tyrannical as the left is, has taken a virus and made an excuse out of it to legislate and just dictate what they want you to do and not do. And as you say, they interestingly made it to where we suffered financially for it. I mean, really big. So had they not closed down the economy, had people just, you know, wearing masks, I'm a mask person. I'm going to say it right here. I wear a mask. I do. I think it does protect me, but and protects my elderly mother, who is very high risk. And I have had relatives die of COVID. So again,
since Debbie's in the confessional mode, we also may as well tell you she actually likes Fauci. She likes Fauci. Now, she admits that she would like him a little bit more. I think you admit that you would like him a little
yeah.
more if he was a little more consistent.
Exactly.
Right? What's your beef with Fauci?
Right. So Fauci, had he, you know, when all of the protests and everything happened after the George Floyd incident, you know, how he came out and he was getting mad at the rallies, but he was perfectly fine with those protests. That's when I was like, wait a minute, COVID doesn't care whether it's a rally or a protest, but he didn't seem to think that. So that's when I was like, he's political. He's definitely taking it political. However, I do believe in some of the things he says about the virus, because as you know, I listened to a podcast about vaccines. I mean, about this particular COVID vaccine, I listened to a daily podcast. So I am very, you know, well-versed on this vaccine and COVID. But I definitely think it was politicized.
Now, you do think also, and I'd like you to say a word about this, that Trump's position on COVID hurt him in the election. And you had an idea for what Trump could have done once he got COVID that unfortunately he didn't do. And I do agree that if had he done this, it would have actually helped a lot. What should Trump have done once he got COVID? How could he have responded a little differently that might have stood him a little better with the voters?
Right. So he should have looked at the camera and said, listen, I got COVID, but I got cured really quickly from it. I'm going to make sure every American gets the exact same treatment that I got. And together we will fight this virus. I would have loved to have heard that from him.
And you thought he was overall a little dismissive of the virus and that that unnerved people a little bit.
They felt
that he didn't provide the leadership that he could have on this subject.
I heard from some
people, I think he was reacting to the left's view of it. And that happens in politics where they say, you know, let's lock everything down. And then you're likely to react and go, wait a minute, you guys are exploiting the... So I think that's understandable why Trump did what he did. But nevertheless, you think it was a political negative for him in 2020.
I think it hurt him with some people. Yes, I do. Definitely. Because a lot of people told me, they said, you know, I really wish that he would have been a little bit more on it with COVID. And these are people that aren't necessarily political, right? And so hearing from them, I kind of got the vibe that there were some people that weren't on board with being dismissive of the virus or thought that the virus was a hoax or any of those things. There was a good number of people like that. So I definitely think that would have helped him. Had he addressed, you know, at one of the debates, because he made it sound as though, you know, he got cured from it, but he never actually said, okay, I want everybody to have the same treatment I had, you know. So anyway, that's just
sometimes even out of germophobia come very good things. And one very good thing that's come out of Debbie's germophobia, I have to admit, is this podcast. Because Debbie was getting really nervous about me speaking. I did like 9 events last October, of course.
11.
And you were freaking out the whole time.
Every time you would go, I would say, okay, you're going to come back with corona. I'm going to have to go in the other bedroom and I'm
going
to...
And you were literally going on Facebook and you were spotting pictures of me taking photos with people and you were like, where was your mask? Where was your mask?
Yes.
And I was like, ugh.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, the bottom line of it is what it was.
I drove you nuts, honey. I'm sorry.
You did drive me nuts. But what I'm saying is one good thing about it is we were more at home, traveling less. And so you pitched to me. You're like, hey, you should really pick up on the idea of the podcast. So ironically, there's a silver lining of sorts, which is to say that with the theater shut down, with me traveling less, I have the opportunity to do a daily podcast, which before, as you know, would have been utterly impossible for me to pull off.
Exactly. And it's, you know, it's been great fun. This is number 15, 3 weeks in.
And you're the producer and you put in, how many hours a day?
I probably put in about 10 hours a day.
For a 1 hour podcast. Wow.
Yeah, but I'm getting better.
No, but podcasts take planning. People don't realize that actually, you know, it's not just a case of just winging it, even though you say I can do it.
Yes.
I like to think about these issues beforehand, or we organize it out, and then we kind of put it out there. Yeah. So anyway, that's a little window into the life of Dinesh and Debbie, and the way that we do the podcast together and the way we talk about corona. I hope this has been helpful to you. I'm really happy to have MyPillow and Mike Lindell as a primary sponsor of this podcast. You know, we've been using the MyPillow products in our house, not just the Giza Dream Sheets, which are incredible, but the flannel sheets. I mean, I literally find myself like wriggling in bed. I'm like, I can't believe these sheets are so awesome. And I feel the same way about Mike's robe. It has a kind of softness to it that just makes you feel like it's so satiny and it just kind of hugs your body. It's wonderful. You just kind of curl up and read in the MyPillow robe. And Mike has a lot of products. He's got a great book that's a very inspirational story. He's got 160 products and he's offering deep discounts on all of them. So what you have to do is just call 800-876-0227 and use promo code Dinesh. Mike literally has jokes that I'm like his leading salesman because sort of the Dinesh army of followers and supporters loves his stuff and wants to support him, and rightly so. Because here's a guy who's a patriot and a Christian and has taken a lot of heat for his beliefs. For a limited time, you can buy one, get one free on the sheets, discounts up to 60% on all kinds of other products. I think he's shipping off his book for like $9 and some cents, and it's free shipping. So call 800-876-0227 or just go to MyPillow.com, buy a whole bunch of stuff, but make sure to use the promo code Dinesh. Is America a zero-sum game? Is it the case that if one guy goes up, another guy has to come down? Is it the case that if you succeed, it has to be at my expense? Evidently, Joe Biden thinks so. Listen.
We've never fully lived up to the founding principles of this nation, to state the obvious, that all people are created equal and have a right to be treated equally throughout their lives. And it's time to act now, not only because it's the right thing to do, but because if we do, we'll all be better off for it. For too long, we've allowed a narrow, cramped view of the promise of this nation to fester. You know, we've bought the view that America is a zero-sum game in many cases. If you succeed, I fail. If you get ahead, I fall behind. If you get the job, I lose mine. Maybe worst of all, if I hold you down, I lift myself up.
This is wrong-headed both on the obvious level, but it's wrong-headed also in a more fundamental way. So on the obvious level, a lot of people actually think Biden's right. And take a simple example of two guys who apply for a job. Well, there's one position available. One guy gets a job. So isn't that zero sum? Actually, no. Because the guy who got the job is better off, but the guy who didn't get the job is not worse off. He's no worse off than he was before. He didn't have the job before. He doesn't have it now. So one guy gains, but not at the expense of the other guy. So Biden is wrong in that very obvious sense, but he's also, I think, wrong in a much deeper sense. He's wrong in the deeper sense that the American way is the very opposite of the way that Biden describes. The way Biden describes, if you succeed, I fail, if you're up, I'm down, that actually has been the way of the world. It's been the way of the world for centuries. It's the way of the world in many other places now. The way of the world is conquest. By and large, people in ancient times thought that they could get stuff by taking it from someone else. That's the only way to get it. Symbolically, you can sort of think of it this way. When I was a kid, I'd go to school and I'd have like a few marbles in my pocket. And sure, the only way for me to get more marbles is to sort of win or grab or take somebody else's marbles. There's no other way. This idea of conquest is well represented in a story that the church father Augustine tells in The City of God. He describes Alexander the Great, who was informed that there was a pirate raiding the high seas. And Alexander summons the pirate and he goes, "What's your big idea, you know, raiding the high seas and taking people's stuff?" And the pirate says to Alexander, "Well, I got the same idea you do, except you've got a big army and a big navy and you're a great emperor. And so you do it on a huge scale. I'm a small pirate, so I do exactly the same thing, but on a smaller scale." So there you have it. This is the ethic of conquest. And for centuries, people thought it was not only the way to get stuff, but it was right. It was manly. It was a kind of masterful display of force. America replaced that ethic with the ethic of wealth creation. And the basic idea here is very simple. If I have some marbles in my pocket, I don't have to take your marbles if I can figure out how to make more marbles. In other words, wealth doesn't have to be seized if it can be created. And wealth creation, creating a system of wealth creation, not just this invention or that invention, but I would call it the invention of invention. That is the secret to America. And that's enabled people to come to America as I did, start out at the very bottom and then move up, upward mobility, but not at anyone's expense. It's upward mobility through seizing opportunity and through striving. That's the American way. That's what's going to keep us strong. And sadly, that's the very America that Biden wants to undermine, if not destroy. Got problems with the IRS? I got to tell you about a time not so long ago when the big bad US government tried to make an example out of me. And I know firsthand the importance of having proper representation to protect your freedom as well as your finances from being taken by the IRS. Ryan, Danica, and the Christian folks at South Coast Tax will discuss your unique situation and create a tailored framework for how to attack the situation head-on with the IRS and allow you a true fresh start. South Coast Tax has a settlement rate average of 3 cents on the dollar, or a 97% reduction rate, along with an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau. With 20 years of experience alone, Ryan told me he has yet to see a tax situation that has stumped him, and that's pretty impressive considering the size of the tax laws. So call Ryan at 800-TAX-3156 or check out their website, southcoasttaxresolution.com. And you'll see for yourself it will be the best move you ever made and the first step in getting your financial freedom back. That's 800-TAX-3156. Debbie and I are actually big fans of the comedian Terrence Williams. We saw him on social media, and the two of us would share his memes, and we'd laugh our heads off. And then finally we got to meet Terrence, and he's now sort of become a part of our extended family. We had fun hanging out with him in Texas. Terrence went to New York and met my daughter, Danielle. So Terrence, it's just delightful to have you on the podcast. Terrence is the author of a remarkable book, and I don't often say this. It's From the Foster House to the White House. It's remarkable, really, Terrence, because you're a remarkable guy with a remarkable story. So can you start by telling us a little bit about your life from the way it started and the hardships that you encountered? Because I want to draw out the lesson of how does somebody climb out of something like that. So tell us a little bit about how Terrence Williams got going.
Well, first, I just want to say congratulations on your new podcast. And I want to thank you and Debbie for being, you know, so supportive. And we're just one big happy family now, you know, so I really appreciate it. But so my book From the Foster House to the White House is about my journey of going through foster care. My mother, sadly, she was addicted to crack cocaine, and she had 9 children, and there were 6 different fathers, and they were not in the picture. And she was unable to take care of us because of her sickness. So I ended up in the foster care system, in and out of homes. I was in over 10 homes, I wasn't adopted until the age 15. But regardless of all the things that I've been through, I live in the greatest country in the world, America. America is the greatest country. And so even though I went through foster care, I was able to make my dreams come true, because this is the land of the opportunity.
Well, you have a land of opportunity, but it also takes something inside of you, Terrence, to say, look, I'm not going to allow the fact that I am a genuine victim. See, you're not a hypothetical victim. You are a real victim. But nevertheless, you didn't let that define you. How did you do that?
You know, Dinesh, I can have all the excuses in the world. I can sit at home, not do anything, collect food stamps. I can, you know, live in poverty if I choose to. And I can have an excuse and say, oh, well, because my mother was on drugs. Oh, because I was in foster care. This is why I'm going through this. But there comes a time in your life where you have to start taking responsibility. When you become an adult, you have to take responsibility. And I just thank God. And I have to thank God, because God was with me. When I didn't have a mother, I had God. When I didn't have a father, I had God. When I was separated from my siblings, I had God. And thank God that he was, you know, able to be there with me and to give me a strong mind. But people have to realize you have to take responsibility. You cannot have excuses your whole entire life. You can't put the blame on your mother, your father, your brother. You have to start taking responsibility.
Folks, I want you to get a hold of Terrence's book, because not only is it about Terrence, it's really an inspirational American story. And it's a story that is so encouraging to us as conservatives, because we realize that no matter what deck of cards you're dealt with in life, ultimately, it's about how you play them. That's what determines your fate. Now, I want to talk to you, Terrence, a little bit about Trump, because knowing you as I do, you must have been sort of heartbroken by what happened to Trump. And just the way that they have piled on Trump, they're trying to lock him up. They're trying to disgrace his legacy. They're trying to go after the people who supported Trump. Tell me a little bit about how you feel, but then set it in the context of what is it about Trump that attracted you so much that you You know, you said, I think, and you said in our movie, Trump Card, you go, I don't just like Trump, I love Trump. And I want to draw out, people will think, oh my God, Terrence, you're an African-American. You look at the background, you go, how can you possibly like this fellow who was a white supremacist who said there were nice guys in Charlottesville? So tell us a little bit about your feelings toward Trump and what do you think those are rooted in?
You know, first of all, I was sick to my stomach. I've been sick to my stomach about what's been going on and how they are treating this, treating President Trump. And yes, I still refer to him as President Trump. He's still my president. But what they are doing to him is absolutely disgraceful and disgusting. And this should not happen to any president. The way that they are treating President Trump, I don't even wish that on Joe Biden. You don't treat anyone like that. That is absolutely wrong.
Well,
you
know, Terrence, he must have done something to tick these people off is an understatement, because the vendetta, the vengeance, the accumulated hatred is unbelievable. We're going to talk more about this. We just need to take a little pause for a word from AMAC. Want to belong to a senior organization you can trust? I want you to know about AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC is the fastest growing conservative 50-plus organization in America. Over 2 million people have joined and now carry the AMAC membership card. AMAC was built by folks who feel the same way we do. We're not alone. AMAC believes in and stands up for the values that have made America great: faith, family, and freedom. They believe in the sanctity of our Constitution, including the First and Second Amendments. They're fighting the good fight against reckless government spending and the ever-expanding scope of the federal government. They are pro-small business, secure borders, support our military, and respect our veterans. AMAC works hard to deliver real value to their members, providing the best benefits, discounts, and services you can find in one place. I want you to join AMAC today. Debbie and I are lifetime members. Go to amac.us and join now. Join AMAC today. The website again is amac.us, amac.us. I'm here with comedian Terrence Williams, just a real friend of Debbie's and mine. We're talking about Trump and the abominable effort to completely demonize Trump. Let's pull back, Terrence, and talk for a moment about what did Trump say, what did he do that made you realize that this is your guy, this is a guy that you can sort of bet on, and this is a guy that you can attach not just your political commitment, but kind of your affection toward?
You know, when Trump came down those escalators, and when Trump spoke to the American people, I knew there was a time for real change. You know, Obama talked about it's time for change. Obama didn't change anything, okay? Obama was a swamp. Obama was the problem in this country. But I've been able to spot out real from the fake ever since I was a child, Dinesh. I've been in abusive homes. I've been around a lot of bad people. I've been around a lot of good people. I can spot it out easily. And when I saw President Trump, I said, this man is the real deal and we need to give him a chance. Okay. Listen, I've made mistakes in my life and people have given me a chance. And I said, you know what? This man is not perfect, but let's give him a chance and let's see what he do. And he was a man of his word, promises made, promises kept. And listen, I don't care that people don't like his personality. This man got things done in this country. This man put the American people first. And that is what it's all about. It is about the American people, not about personality. It's about policy. That's what it's about.
You made a point.
I respect him for that.
Terrence, you made a point in Trump Card where you said that Trump didn't really owe the black community. The black community didn't put Trump in office. So he could have easily said, well, guys, this guy didn't vote for me. Who cares? But
exactly.
So I think spell out that a little bit, the fact that you were
exactly.
struck.
You know, they call this man a racist. And President Trump won the 2016 election without the black vote. He didn't get much of the black vote at all. We all know that. Now, when he was elected, he bent it over backwards for the black community. He did cartwheels for the black community. He did things that we thought the first black president was going to do. I thought Obama was going to do all the things that Trump did. So that's where I was like, you know what? This man is the real deal. He is about the American people. And all these black people talk crap about this. They said bad things about this president. They said horrible things about him, and he still helped the black community because it's not about him. It is about the American people. And that's why we'll always love and respect President Trump.
Terrence, let's turn to the topic of digital censorship. You had some battles on social media. Tell us a little bit about that. And is that because comedy at its root is a little dangerous? In other words, comedy is dangerous not because what it says is false, but because it cuts to the core of what is true. Why have these digital moguls been after you, and how have you been surviving that ordeal?
You know, Facebook, they took one of my videos down because I made a joke and said that turtles are going to be voting in the election. It was just a joke. I said turtles will be voting for the Democrats in this election. And they took the video down saying that it was fake news, that turtles cannot vote, that reptiles cannot vote. And I'm like, it's just a joke. But you know what? Comedy is the best thing ever. Because I can get anyone to listen to me with comedy. And that's what big tech does not like. They don't like it. I have had people that have been on the other side and say, you know what, Terrence, until I watch your videos, and I only watch them because, you know, I wanted to get a laugh. And even though I didn't agree with you, I wanted to get a laugh. But while I was getting that laugh, you also taught me something, you know, because I've been reading fake news for the longest. Because in comedy, you know, you can get people to listen, and then you can also spread a message in comedy because everybody's listening. Everybody wants to laugh. And big tech does not like that at all. And they have shut me out. I have not been able to post on my Facebook in almost 3 months since the election. I've been shut out. And Facebook says they don't know what's going on. Twitter, I lost over 200,000 followers, Dinesh. I had 1.2. I'm almost at 900,000. This is absolutely disgusting. People can't find me on Instagram. They don't want the other. They don't want the truth out there. They don't want our voices to be heard. There are two sides to every story. But when it comes to big tech, they only want people to know one side. And that side is the wrong side.
It's very creepy, Terrence. So, folks, I want you to get out and get Terrence's book. Look for Terrence, because I think he's also out on the circuit. He does these comedy shows. It'll make your stomach hurt with laughter. Terrence, as we say goodbye for this episode, I want you to send a message to my wife, Debbie. She does not really let me eat fried chicken. She has all kinds of dietary reasons for that. But you are a salesman of fried chicken. You love fried chicken. You're identified with fried chicken. So tell Debbie why every now and then I should be allowed a chicken leg, and perhaps even to be chomping on one at on the podcast.
Dinesh, you are not going to get me beat up, okay? That's not happening. How dare you try to get me hurt? You're not getting me hurt. I'm sorry. Because Debbie don't play. I'm not getting involved in that. You better eat a salad, man.
Perhaps I'm just going to ask you, why do you love fried chicken? What's it about?
Fried chicken everybody loves fried chicken. That's one, white and black people, we all love fried chicken. You know, we can all, you know, it has brought us all together over times, you know. So it is so good and greasy. It's something that you just can't have. I'm sorry about it, brother. I'm so sorry.
Terrence, it's a real pleasure. Thanks for coming on the podcast. See you again. I don't trust the mafia, and neither do I trust the scoundrels who run big tech. Neither should you. The fact is, the internet never forgets. There's never been a more important time to protect your internet activity. And that's why I urge you to get ExpressVPN. Everything you search for, watch, or click online can be tracked by big tech companies. They can then match your activity to your true identity using your device's unique IP address. When I switch on ExpressVPN with my computer or phone, my IP address is masked by a secure VPN server, which makes it harder for websites to identify me. The ExpressVPN app also encrypts my network data to protect my sensitive information from being compromised. Plus, you can use ExpressVPN on up to 5 devices simultaneously, so multiple users on your network can stay safe with a single subscription. What I like most is how easy it is to use. It just takes one click to protect all your devices. That's why they're rated number 1 virtual private network by CNET and Wired. Stop handing over your data to big tech companies. Go with the VPN I trust for online protection. Visit expressvpn.com/Dinesh to get 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Dinesh to get an extra 3 months free. Go to expressvpn.com/Dinesh. I'm really liking this new segment I've dropped in at the end of the podcast where I take on questions from you. And I probably can do one or two in a show. I'm revamping my website, by the way, and I'm going to try to create a way to take on more questions there. But for now, send them in to me directly. That email is questiondinesh@gmail.com. And by the way, you can send it as an email, but another way to send a question is as an audio recording. Just record it on your phone and then email that audio clip in, because it's kind of fun sometimes, not just for me to summarize a question, but to actually hear from the person asking the question, and then I'll respond to it. I'm going to take one question, maybe two, probably one today. And that's a question from Heather, which goes like this. What are the best books written, Dinesh, on American history? Ben Franklin, Abraham Lincoln, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration. I'm trying to get some knowledge I didn't get in school or in college. What should I be reading? Now, boy, I don't even really know quite where to start with this. I guess I'm somewhat tempted to, although this may seem egotistical, start with my own books. The Republican Bob Dole many years ago was asked by someone, are television commercials good for democracy? And Dole, in his very Bob Dolean way, go, well, mine are. And that's kind of how I feel. You want to read some books? Well, I mean, I've written a bunch of them. I'll start by recommending just one, and that is my book. This is probably my best-selling book of all time, America, Imagine a World Without Her. It's not a deeply ideological book in the sense that it's the book that makes the case for a thoughtful and passionate patriotism. Not just the way we feel about our country, but why we should feel that, why we're right to love our country. Remember, it was Burke who said, to love our country ought to be lovely. Well, this is a book about why America is lovely. Now, I want to also recommend another book, a different book. And I'm tempted to recommend a bunch, but I'm not going to. The philosopher Alan Bloom, many years ago, was talking about the great books. And he said, look, I don't want to give you a long list of the 100 greatest books of all time and ask you to wade your way through all of them. No, the way to read a book is to pick one book, but to really engage with it, to make it part of you, to conduct a kind of interior dialogue with the author. And for Bloom, that was Rousseau. Bloom loved Rousseau. Rousseau became kind of his specialty. So in the Bloomian mode, I want to recommend this book by political scientist Harry Jaffa, and it's called A New Birth of Freedom. A New Birth of Freedom. And the subtitle is Abraham Lincoln and the Coming of the Civil War. Now, this is a very beautifully written but very deep book. It's not the kind of book that you read straight through. In fact, it has so many allusions and references. It might actually be helpful at times to stop, to go learn a little bit more about what he's talking about, and then come back to the book. So this is a book that I think you can keep with you for a lifetime and learn from it. I have read it more than once. And it represents the sort of summit of Professor Jaffa's achievement. He had written a book in 1954, a wonderful book, by the way, so this is a second recommendation, called Crisis of the House Divided, a study of the Lincoln-Douglas debates. And he promised there would be a sequel. But the sequel didn't come out until, well, let's see, this book came out in 2004, 50 years later. It took him 50 years of thinking to produce this book, and it is worth it because it is a book that that will enrich you in all kinds of ways. It's a book that immerses itself in history and philosophy and political science and the American founding and the Civil War, and you learn things about English history and about King John and about Shakespeare and about Lincoln. Most of all, you learn something about the meaning of America. So that's my recommendation. Many times in this podcast, you will see I refer to books. Obviously, my books itself have references that direct you to other books. So this is a way to embark on what I think will be, I hope will be, for you a kind of lifelong journey. Books can make us wiser about life than even experience can, because our experience is inherently limited. But through books, we discover people who lived in other times and other places and had deep thoughts that can be very illuminating for us. So when you have time, and I would urge you to make time, open up a book, as long as it's the right book.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.